Well, thank you very much for this opportunity to be with you again today and to bring greetings and also to thank you for your support over the years. The years have turned into decades quite quickly, which is quite scary. A lifetime in mission. Well, I guess it must have started perhaps with a slide of a termite hill. That's one of the slides I remember from the Baptist Missionary Society missionaries coming to Sunday school when I was a child in a village and showing this slide of a termite hill. And from there, I guess my interest grew. But as I grew up in my faith, I was aware that one day I would end up in Africa teaching. It was just an awareness I had from the beginning. So as I grew up, I eventually came to Wallington to teach in my first teaching post. I went to teach at Holy Trinity, which is the primary school down the road, and I taught some of the children of the good people of St. Pat's as well as Holy Trinity. And then as I came here, I came with the baggage of mission, that sense of being called to go out to Africa at some point. And I thought, well, when I finished my training, nothing opened up. I was still in England. So maybe it was just a romantic illusion. Tom P., I'll have to teach in England. But I was here in my first post, and then after about 4 years, I was aware that it was necessary to move on. I didn't want to stay in my probationary post for a long time, so I began to look for different positions in the Times Educational Supplement and thinking about scale two posts, promotion. And then through my morning readings, my Bible readings, I began to realize that God was telling me something new was afoot. Some change was coming about. And then we had a mission weekend in Holy Trinity, and the curate was saying, well, it's about time we didn't just send money, but we sent people. And then I knew it was time for me to move. And through a series of talking with Norman Isburn, who was the vicar then, I didn't realize, but he was, in fact, the chairman of Africa Inland Mission International Council. Talking with him, talking with the wardens and the various people in the church, within a year, I was in Africa. I was in Zaire. It just took that time. And I guess looking back, it was necessary for me to cut my teeth in the classroom here in England in a safe place before I went somewhere else, which was more difficult. And for me, it was a short term to start with, 3 years. I guess that seems a long time, but I thought 1 year to get used to things and make lots of mistakes, 2 years to find my feet, the third year to actually contribute, then that's it. But over the years, each time my period of service has come to an end, I've sought the Lord to say, you know, should I go back? Should I do something new? So it's not been a long time from the beginning. It's been in short stages with the Lord giving specific direction each time to know that there was a place there. So although it sounds as though, you know, 20, 30 years is a long time of being abroad, it hasn't been a long time from the beginning. It's been step by step and assignment by assignment. So I've spent as many years I've been in education in different spheres, teaching missionary children, teaching secondary school kids English, being involved in national education as a schools inspector in Zaire, teaching in Nairobi, and then training English teachers for secondary schools back in Congo, same country, different name, and now teaching adults English in Rwanda. Many different positions, many different assignments, working in many different cultural situations. But one of the suburbs of Nairobi is a suburb called Karen, called after Karen Blixen, out of Africa fame. And there's a factory there called Kazuri Beads, and they make these lovely necklaces from clay. And every time you go there, you need to buy something because they're so lovely. It's for women, and it's a product to show their skill and their beauty in creating necklaces and jewelry out of beads. So what has the Lord crafted for me to show his skill and his beauty over these many years? Well, let's make a beautiful necklace together. And the first thing I would say to put on that necklace is that God's choices are good. It always peeves me whenever people are talking about, oh, you know, I was really willing to do whatever the Lord wanted me to do, even to go to Africa. That just peeves me so much when I think, well, it's a pretty good place to go. But God's choices are good. Now, when I first applied, saying what my conditions would be, that I would be in education, short-term English, then there was an opportunity to go to Zaire to teach in a missionary boarding school. To me, it sounded wonderful. I read an article about it up in the Blue Hills above Lake Albert on the Uganda border. I just loved to go there. And then I heard about a school in Juba in Sudan. Now, Juba is hot and humid and was always known to be the armpit of Africa. I thought, oh, I wouldn't like to go there, but you know, maybe the Lord is calling me there and I ought to go. And the morning of, I was at London Bible School for one of our mission conferences, and that morning I was reading in my normal pattern of devotions from 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 1 to 5. It's all about how people in the last days will refuse eating meat, getting married, and all the good things that God has given us to enjoy. And it just seemed to me that they were trying to be spiritual in God's way, in their own way, and to be martyrs for the cause. And God didn't want them to be martyrs for the cause. And just spoke to me that I didn't need to go to Juba and be in a hot and humid, awful situation. I could enjoy going to Redi and enjoy being in this beautiful place in Redi Academy. And it just showed me that God gives us places to be so that we can flourish. He wants us to be round pegs in a round hole, not square pegs in a round hole so we can't operate and we can't work, but so that we're going to be able to flourish and work well and enjoy all the good things he gives us to do. So for me, going to Redi Academy, being involved in an American boarding school, a school in the bush, it was a very creative time, just so many creative good things. And so I would say, first of all, the things that I've learned is that God's choices for us are good. We don't have to be martyrs. We can enjoy the good things that he gives us. Secondly, I would say that missionary life has been an enriching experience. Well, we live with many different cultures. You are working in an African culture, but, well, there are many different tribes. There are over 200 tribes even in Congo, so each one has a different language, different cultural experience, a different take on life. And then you're working with missionaries, and I remember a senior missionary who had been born and raised in Zaire. She said to me, Bridget, remember this, those Americans may be white, but they're not the same as English people. And you're living with Americans and Canadians and Germans, and they're speaking your language, but not quite in the same way, and you're trying to communicate. But it's enriching, because you're seeing that there are many different ways of living, and it challenges your worldview. You come from England and think, this is what it means to be a Christian. This is what Christianity is all about. We've always done it this way. This is the right way. This is the truth. Hey, that's not always so. And you're learning about God's culture for all of us. And it makes you question, am I doing it because I'm just from England and that's the way we do it? Or is this really biblical Christianity? And so that's really important, that living in this culture, working with other nationalities, both white and African, is an enriching experience. It shows you how big God is, because he's a God for all cultures, and Christianity works in every culture. So I would say that there are good things that we can add to our necklace of faithfulness and skill and beauty. God's choices are good for us, and missionary life is very enriching. But there are some negatives, of course. This is the good thing about this black and white necklace of mine. You're always saying, kwaheri, kwaheri. That's Swahili that means goodbye. Actually, it means go with blessing, which is kind of more positive. But you say choir hairy all the time because you live for a short time very intensely with a group of people, and then it's goodbye. It took me my first term, that was September to December, I was teaching these American children. I didn't know what tacos were. They didn't always follow my British English. I couldn't say laboratory. I say laboratory, even though I say lavatory and not laboratory. All these difficulties. And then comes December, it's the vacation time. Wow, I just about know where I am and who I am and who these people are. And then a couple of families start talking about their home assignment and preparation for going back home for a time. And I thought, this is taking the rug from under my feet. I thought I was getting it. I thought I was having a sense of belonging, and then people are leaving. And I thought, this is what it's going to be like all the time now. You live for an intensive time with people, and then it's goodbye. Some of you might have met Wendy when she was here. She was a colleague. We lived in a small mud hut for a couple of years. No internal ceilings, no internal doors, and sometimes you could have cut the air because we had some bad days. But we worked hard at living together in that small space. We both spoke English. We both spoke French. Mine was better than hers. I spoke better Swahili than hers, but she spoke good Pazandi, the local language, and I was learning Lingala, the trade language, for teaching in that area. So we were learning, we were coping with living in a mud hut. You have to step over the ditch and then duck at the same time to get into the building. It was a new building. I broke all my nails. I couldn't put my contact lenses in at that point. All these things that make it hard so you live together. And then we had to evacuate because it was 96 and war was brewing. It was coming up from the Rwanda overspill. We had to leave. We went for debriefing in a major Bible boarding school in Kenya. I decided to stay and teach in a new SIL school there in the city. She said, I'm going back to America. I've got stuff to do there. So we said, see you sometime. Goodbye. And that was it. And you think, we've invested 2 years of working together, living together in this small space, and it's goodbye. So there are lots of goodbyes in this mission experience of constantly moving on. That's one of the hard things. And with that comes another black thing, and that's loss. As I said, we had to evacuate in 96 because war was brewing. It ended up with a coup d'etat, getting rid of the President Mobutu in Zaire, a takeover of the country, and the soldiers were coming up from the south. So we evacuated. So we had a day's notice. We were told that there was the big DC-3 plane coming in, 2 seats, would you please take them and leave? You have your passport, you have American dollars. So what are we going to do with all the stuff? You have to leave it. You have to leave all your workers. You have to leave your Zairean colleagues, people you'd worked with all that time. And then we went over to Rift Valley Academy. We had some time together. And then after Christmas, we said, okay, this is it, you guys. This is the end. We thought within 2 weeks we'd be back, but it was evident that this was going to be a long time. It was the end of our Zaire branch of Africa Inland Mission. And we'd worked together for a long time. We had a boarding school. We'd gotten to know each other, gotten to know the kids. And then it was the end. And hardly anybody went back when it was time to go free to go back sometime later. Just the end of that time. A great deal of loss. Among that was 3 years of all my lesson plans I'd written for, daily lessons, of all my good books, all got looted or pillaged or are somewhere in North Congo. I don't know what happened to them. But all that loss, but the people and the ministry and the things. I think one of the most precious things about being in this trade, as it were, in this work, but I think it would be true for people wherever we are, if we're members of God's family and are seeking Him, is that God speaks. God speaks into situations. And I think it's much more exciting when God takes the initiative to speak and communicate with us, rather than it being an answer to our question, when He speaks ahead of time because He can see the future. And there are some special things about situations to warn, to explain, to prepare, to counsel, and even to rebuke when attitudes are wrong. Now, I said I trained as a teacher. When I trained, it was before the time when you had to have a degree. So I did a 3-year teacher training certificate. And then I remember we had a form to fill in to ask whether we were going to do the BEd, the Bachelor of Education Honours degree, on a 4th year. I come from a farming family. We're very practical. Everybody is either a farmer or married to a farmer, except me. I'm a teacher. And I thought, I'm not sure that the culture of my family allows me to do something as impractical as just studying for a year, where it's not going to be as practical as getting a teacher training certificate. I remember it was the end of the vacation. I was praying, and then suddenly it came to me, fill in that form. God spoke to tell me that He wanted me to take that degree. And looking back afterwards, I can see how important it was. Okay, maybe it wasn't quite so necessary in England, but certainly in Congo or in Africa, if you have a degree, you're much more useful, because qualifications are important. And if you're working for the Ministry of Education, it's important to have a diploma, a degree. And in fact, because I had a degree, I was the only one qualified who could take over for the prefect for his sick leave. So in retrospect, it was important. And I remember being here in Wellington. I lived in a small bedsit along Domain Road, and then we began to talk about renting a house, some of us in the 20-plus group. And I remember in a time of prayer, God showing me a mountain, and I had the impression that all I could see was now, but He could see beyond. He didn't want me to be involved in that house sharing. I was just to stay in that bedsit. And as it turned out, I left Wellington shortly afterwards, but just preparing me for that. And then in Dungu, we lived in this mud hut. It just had 2 plank doors with a bolt on either door. You don't feel too locked in there. And then one evening, the catechist who lived on the church plot came and knocked on the door, and he told us the infantry soldiers who lived in town, they had a base there, were putting on their uniforms. Now, if you fear anybody in Congo, in Zaire, you fear the army. Everybody fears their own soldiers. You don't trust them. So when we heard that the soldiers were putting on their uniforms, it meant they were going to do something. So everybody was scared. We were living in this small hut with just a bolt on the doors. And then suddenly, the Spirit spoke the words from Psalm 91, verse 5. You shall not be afraid of the terror by night or the arrow that flies by day. And that spoke peace to me, that I could cope and that we were okay that night. It turned out to be a bit of a fiasco, but you don't play games with Congolese soldiers. Just God speaking into my heart words of scripture. And then we went over to Nairobi. I took a job there teaching in SIL school, and we prayed much about this trip we were going to go on for a day trip. I was studying Job because it was relevant, and then one day I was just finishing my quiet time, and I had this premonition that something bad was going to happen. And then a bit later on, I was involved in a car crash, as some of you know. But because God had given me the impression that something bad was going to happen, it didn't cause a lot of confusion. I was at peace about that situation and was able to cope with everything that involved. So I was very grateful for that knowledge beforehand. Just God keeping care of us and looking after us. So all the time in these many situations, God speaks to meet us in our need. Many other situations as well, but I think we need to move on. And finally, I would say one of the things that I've learned in all these experiences that you're living on the edge, but you're living on the edge of God's grace. You keep changing country, you keep changing region, you keep changing language, you keep changing your way of life, the people that you're working with, your assignment, and every time you start afresh. And then you become a language idiot. You're a cultural idiot. You're an outsider because you don't know quite how it works. You don't know how you're going to shake hands. Do you shake hands like this? Or do you shake hands like this? Or do you greet someone like this? Or do you greet someone like this? And then in France, is it two kisses or is it three kisses? Or it's awful. You just don't know how to greet people. You're an outsider. You're living on the edge, but fortunately, it's a good experience as well, because each day you can live on the edge of God's grace and find God's grace sufficient for that situation, for coping and for enjoying the day and knowing He's with you, even though you have to keep learning and starting from the beginning again. So what have we got? We've got a necklace of all the good things that God has done. And we can put the necklace on of God's faithfulness. And it makes me think of that song, Faithful One, So Unchanging. Ageless One, You're My Rock of Peace. Lord of all, I depend on You. I call out to You again and again. I call out to You again and again. You are my rock in times of trouble. You lift me up when I fall down. All through the storm, Your love is the anchor. My hope is in You alone.